Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jax DiEugenio. In today's episode, we spoke with Naval Daver, MD, about the evolving role of menin inhibition in acute myeloid leukemia and emerging data with revumenib within different subsets of patients with relapsed refractory disease. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Daver discussed findings from the Phase 1 AUGMENT-101 trial, which evaluated revumenib in patients with relapsed refractory AML harboring NPM1 mutations or KMT2A rearrangements.
Menin inhibitors, including revumenib, as you mentioned, are being evaluated in various populations, including NPM1, new 98 rearranged, and KMT2A rearranged. In the relapsed refractory population, we actually probably have published a seminal paper looking at this from our group, Dr. Issa, myself, Blood Advances, a couple of years ago. We find it's about 15% for NPM1. And the NUP98 various groups have looked at, this is probably in the 3-5% range for NUP98 rearranged relapsed refractory AML. And then KMT2A rearranged is probably another 6-8%, a little bit more common in the younger, below 30, a little less common as you get older. And then there are other fusions, I think it's very important to note, that may also be sensitive to menin inhibitors that are not as common and have not been a focus, but they have been evaluated in trials and case reports published on them. Some of these include UBTF rearrangement, a NUP214 fusions, peak COM fusions, and others. So I think at the end of the day, we think the total bucket of what we call menin-sensitive aberrations may be close to 35-40% in the relapse refractory setting, which is a pretty sizable chunk, kind of similar to the FLT3 inhibitor space. So for NPM1 relapse refractory, I think first it's important to highlight that this is no longer what we would consider a favorable type of NPM1 population. And we actually, again, in our paper, looked at the outcomes of relapse refractory NPM1 compared to relapse refractory patients without NPM1. And we showed in a pretty big population that there was actually no difference in terms of survival in salvage 2, salvage 3 patients with relapsed NPM1. Median survival is about 6-7 months. So I think there's a huge unmet need there. And the menin inhibitors have been showing good efficacy. Revumenib in the AUGMENT-101 for the relapsed NPM1 specifically has a CR/CRh rate of close to about 25%, overall response rate of about 50%. And so this is quite encouraging because historically we have seen in the advanced salvage NPM1, the CR/CRh rates are about 10-15%, overall response rates are less than 30-35%. So this seems to definitely be an improvement. And also the duration of remission here is close to around 6-7 months. So I do think that this is a incremental improvement with single agent menin inhibitor compared to what you may see with standard therapy. But again, I think we will see the maximum benefit of these drugs as we move them either upfront into the combinations or potentially even in salvage in combinations. And this is being looked at with revumenib, with HMA-VEN, with higher response rates in the salvage setting than the single agent. Definitely. To my knowledge, there's not been focused presentations aggregating that data, but I know that there have been responses with that population. Now, what we know from the preclinical data is that the NUP98 tend to be more resistant. So we find that there's kind of a sensitivity gradient or scale when it comes to menin inhibitors and how they work with different mutations. And the most sensitive on that scale is the KMT2A rearranged. Second seems to be NPM1. And then the least sensitive or more resistant, requiring either higher doses or prolonged exposure to menin inhibitors, has been the NUP98 rearranged. But that being said, we have seen a handful of responses across various menin inhibitors. Aggregate, if I had to put a best guess, I'm thinking it's probably in that 20-30% response rate. And again, if we do achieve a response, especially in the NUP98 rearranged, we are nervous and cognizant that this may be short-lived given how aggressive it is. And we do try to move those patients to transplant quickly. I again think, especially in the ones like NUP98, even more so, a combinatorial approach is likely going to be the best approach, and we're looking at those going forward.
Setting
so the AZA-VEN actually works very well on the hematopoietic stem progenitor populations, whereas the menin inhibitors actually work better on the differentiated and monocytic population. And so this is why we preclinically found that the combination of those should be able to address both the early hematopoietic stem progenitor cells, but also the more differentiated monocytic, monoblastic populations that can cause resistance to AZA-VEN, but the menin inhibitor have exquisite activity and sensitivity there. And so this has led to many combinations. Probably the best or more mature data is among the BEAT AML study, which was the AZA-VEN revumenib frontline presented by Josh Zeigner last year at the EHA and ASH meetings. And they have shown about 26 patients worth of data, of which 24 were evaluable. I think two of them had either early mortality or early discontinuation. And impressively, all 24 who had an endocycle 1 marrow and were considered evaluable did achieve a response. Now, a couple of things that we have noted is that the durability of response at this time was too early, so we haven't seen that. And we have seen, and Josh Zeigner did present, that there was some degree of prolonged count recovery and longer intervals between subsequent cycles. So they have been considering reducing the duration of venetoclax from the standard label that they started with 28 days towards lower amount, maybe 21 to 14 days, as we are doing with in the other triplets with success and ability to avoid prolonged myelosuppression. But that being said, a very high response rate in the 90 to 100% when all patients are considered valuable. They did not seem to have a higher than expected early mortality or severe infection ICU rate. And of course, the key three things I want to look at going forward are the molecular MRD clearance, especially for NPM1, and if available, maybe for KMT2A, and then the duration of the remission, and most importantly, of course, overall survival, because we know with AZA-VEN doublet, the expected median survival across the board is about 15 to 18 months, but in NPM1, it's higher, closer to 25, 30 months, and with KMT2A, it's around 12 to 14 months. So it will be interesting to see with the triplet, both in KMT2A and NPM1, when we compare apples to apples, what is the increment that we are seeing. And there are others that are looking at it. We will hopefully see some of that data at EHA 2025. Bleximenib has a frontline cohort with AZA-VEN, ziftomenib, and then also enzomenib is looking at that combination currently in salvage with AZA-VEN, but eventually will also be moving to the frontline. And then we will have to compare the myelosuppression, the QTC impact, differentiation syndrome rates, molecular clearance, durability between the various ones to see if they are similar or are there differences emerging. But I do think in the future, this will be the best way to use the menin inhibitors to achieve deep, early, complete molecular remissions, enabling us potentially then to de-escalate in a few months and maybe even stop the currently indefinite therapy maybe after 8 to 12 months if we show repeated molecular clearance. So this could be a very interesting and important way to develop these in the future. I think in general, you know, targeted therapy has made a lot of progress in AML, starting with the FLT3 inhibitors, where I always like to quote the example of FLT3 used to be considered adverse in 2002 when it was first published and identified with the 5-year survival of 20 to 25%. Today, for young FLT3 ITD, we are publishing close to 70% survival and it has moved from adverse to intermediate, and in some cases may even be favorable. So this has been one of the success stories. We're seeing similar evolution with IDH, and I think the same is going to happen with menin, where KMT2A rearranged just in, you know, 2021, 2022 is still considered adverse based on the current NCCN ELN guidelines. But I think as we incorporate menin inhibitors into the frontline setting with both intensive chemo HMA-VEN, I would not be surprised if that actually improves survival, brings it to intermediate and potentially even into a favorable group. So I do think this will be a major player. Similarly, beyond KMT2A, I think for NPM1, NUP98, UBTF, other fusions, it's going to have the same impact in further improving their survival. A lot of people say, well, NPM1 in the frontline is favorable. Well, this is true, but, you know, for a patient, nothing is favorable unless the cure rate is close to 100%. So when we say the median survival is 25 to 30 months, yes, this may be better than other groups. But of course, if I can make 25 months, 45 months, or 50 months, or a cure, then that is a benefit. And more importantly, if I can do it with the ability to stop therapy by improving my frontline therapy, that is a big win. And I think NPM1, that is how we're thinking about it. Could this be similar to the next APL, where we could do a time-limited effective therapy with menin inhibitors plus HMA-VEN, achieve deep molecular remissions, stop treatment with close monitoring, and cure a number of these patients? So I do think we're going to see a huge impact. And of course, We are going to then be looking at combinations of menin inhibitors with the FLT3 inhibitors, with the IDH inhibitors. And eventually, I think as we move to profiling using RNA-based expression, I would not be surprised if close to 40-45% of AML end up being candidates who benefit from menin-based therapy. So I think this will be a very, very, very important addition to the FLT3 inhibitors and IDH inhibitors.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, like us on Enclave and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you'd like today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. And while you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air.